WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
How to pay for college. Well, that is something that keeps students and parents like me awake at night. This is Reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Yeah, college. Wow, that is something that I've been thinking about a lot. I've actually got a high school senior right now. And we are having that conversation every day in my home. We're trying to figure out where she's going to apply and, of course, how we're going to afford it. And here in Illinois, the average cost of in-state tuition at a public university, it's way above the national average. We've seen a brain drain with some students leaving Illinois altogether to attend other state colleges. So could some new state legislation in the works be the answer? Well, we checked in with WBEZ higher ed reporter Lisa Curion-Phillip about ways Illinois lawmakers are hoping to make college more affordable. I started by getting her to explain just how expensive things can get here in Illinois.
About 20 years ago, state funding made up about 70% of public university revenues in the state. So it paid for a majority of how they educated students. And then the rest of that was made up with tuition and fees. So that's about 30%. Mm-hmm. 20 years later, that has flipped. And so now state funding has decreased so much in inflation-adjusted dollars that it now only makes up about 35% of how much public universities need to educate their students. Mm-hmm. And the rest of that they've had to make up for with tuition. So that means that they have had to increase how much they're charging students, or they're incentivized to enroll wealthier students who can pay more and subsidize a lower income students.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's really, really shut a lot of families out.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Or like you said, push them to go to nearby states.
To leave.
Yeah.
Right. Now in 2021, the state created a commission to look into how we fund higher education. The name is a mouthful, so I'm not going to attempt it, but just tell us about them and their recommendations.
Yeah, so what they were tasked with was coming up with some system for funding higher education and public universities here in Illinois. And what they found is they need some sort of formula that takes into account how much each university needs to serve its particular students, with special attention given to students that have been marginalized and have been shut out of higher education because affordability's kind of gone out of the window. So, you know, we've seen in the state that, like, for example, college attendance among Black students has dropped by a third over the past decade. Mm-hmm. So it really, what they wanted was a formula that takes into account equity, adequacy, and accountability. So like the adequacy part of it is that colleges have enough to educate the students that they have. Mm-hmm. And then also be able to have, and acknowledge, I should say, that educating different students costs different amounts of money. Students who are coming from very privileged backgrounds maybe don't need the same supports that students who are first generation, for example, their parents didn't go to college. Mm-hmm. They aren't as familiar with what campus life is like and need more supports to get through
it. I see.
Yeah.
So just so that we're clear, how is the state currently funding higher education?
That is a really good question, Sasha, because there's not really a system to it. There's not really logic. It's kind of just like, what did they get last year? Or really what it essentially comes down to is these university leaders going down to Springfield to ask for money, mm-hmm. and hoping that they get it. And that's really another issue aside from just an overall decline in state funding. It's really led to a lot of unpredictability and volatility in how much money schools are getting from year to year.
So that's why this commission then is proposing what's called equity-based funding.
Yes.
And it's a little complex.
Yes.
But break it down for us.
So complex. So basically, it takes into account what kind of students a university serves. So like, for example, U of I, the state's biggest public university, it tends to have more well-off students than a place like Chicago State or Northeastern Illinois, where a good chunk of those students qualify for things like the Pell Grant and come from low-income families. Mm-hmm. It also takes into account students' race, whether or not they have disabilities, et cetera, so that schools are essentially getting more money for students who have more needs, basically. That's the basic parameters. And it figures out like how much a school needs to educate the students it has. So that's like an adequacy target.
Right.
And kind of looks at how much can a university be expected to contribute to that bucket of money, whether that's through tuition, like how much can students be expected to contribute given like their socioeconomic status, et cetera. And then the gap between that and what they need, and then the state fills in the rest.
I see. Well, this funding model that you're describing, it's received both praise and criticism because it brings in, as you mentioned, racial considerations into how we fund higher education. Now, we'll remember that back in 2023, the Supreme Court struck down affirmative action in college admissions. This funding plan, though, Lisa, this would provide more state dollars to those universities that you mentioned that have the large Latino and Black populations. But I wonder if you have any concerns about whether the funding plan could face some legal challenges.
I've definitely wondered that and have asked some of the advocates that are involved with getting this this formula off the ground whether they're concerned about it. And they say yes, of course, like especially given the change in presidential administration, and we're starting to see legal challenges pop up against programs that take into consideration and race. For example, there's a scholarship program here in Illinois to get more teachers of color into public schools here.
Oh, okay.
And that's been targeted because it awards scholarships to students of color. So that's already facing a lawsuit. There's definitely a possibility there. The people who are working on the formula are trying to make it as airtight as possible, mm-hmm. through language, et cetera, to hopefully keep it kind of immune to these legal challenges.
Right.
But we'll see what happens there.
So I want to get more into the kind of impact that this could have on the state's university system. So if I'm understanding what you've described correctly, Lisa, additional resources, they might get shifted away from some of those more well-off schools, like I'm thinking of Urbana-Champaign, for instance, and go to schools like the examples you gave, Chicago State, Northeastern Illinois University, where we've also seen that they currently have less than half of their students graduating in 8 years. Is that right?
Yeah. Some of these smaller schools are definitely seeing very low graduation rates. And of course, some say like, why are we giving these schools more funding when their graduation rates are low? And I think people at those schools and some of the advocates in the state would say, hey, it's because these schools have been hit the hardest by these state funding decreases. Their students are the least able to pay these higher tuition rates. So one thing about this formula is that because, the people behind it wanted to get the buy-in of all of the university presidents at the table, mm-hmm. is that no university would get less funding than they are now. So everyone's set to get like at least a little bit of a
something.
Bump.
So, to that point, it's interesting that the president of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign is on board with this.
Yeah.
Even though they're least likely to benefit, right?
Right.
And get that extra.
Yeah.
So
right.
I wonder then if we'll see sort of a broad bipartisan support.
Yeah. I'm definitely curious to hear how this will do once the legislative session gets going. I know that some of the advocates and the lawmakers behind this bill have done these listening sessions across the state to try to get student feedback, taxpayer feedback, and they're really trying to build a bipartisan coalition. But, it does involve a lot of money and the state is not a flush state. So we'll mm-hmm. see where this goes.
I also wonder how an education department under the Trump administration, who Donald Trump's been very critical of DEI efforts.
Yes, yeah.
How might they react to this kind of funding model?
It's also a really great question. And one, I think, I mean, first they have to get this thing passed, of course. And then funding it is going to require another increasing funding over the next decade. So this is definitely a long-term thing. But like, if this formula isn't put in place next year, we'll see how the Education Department reacts.
So what's the timeline on how long it could take to pass the legislation and then actually implement it?
The hope is that it will get passed in the spring session.
Oh, okay.
And then the formula will be implemented by the fall. And then we'll have to see if the funding that, you know, the formula recommends actually gets put into place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another one of those we'll have to wait and see moments.
Yes.
Yeah. While you're here, though, Lisa, I do want to tap you on another story that you wrote about the turmoil at Columbia College here
in
Chicago.
Yes.
What's happening?
So they've faced a deficit for quite a long time now. Like a lot of other small private universities, they've really been struggling with enrollment and finances. Their enrollment's like half what it was in 2010.
Oh, wow.
In an effort to, this is what college leaders say, in an effort to address this deficit, they've cut a bunch of their programs. They're reducing the number of majors they are offering from like 60 plus to 30.
Mm-hmm. But isn't that going to lead to more declining enrollment?
That
if
was
you don't
my
have the
question.
Program I want?
Yeah, that was my question to the college president on Tuesday. I was like, hey, so, you know, students are going to hear about this. And you're recruiting for next year. How is that going to impact how students are seeing your school? And they've had a lot of turmoil. Last fall, they had an adjunct faculty strike that lasted 6 weeks.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And, you know, interrupted classes for that length of time. They've gotten a lot of bad press. And I think students are definitely going to be asking themselves, like, should I go to the school? And, you know, who's to say if I go that my major won't be cut. And
right.
Of course, the students who are in the programs, that's some of them that are being cut, will be allowed to finish out. But I think it still raises this question of like, how do they recruit more students?
And what's leadership saying to you?
They're saying this is a necessary step in order to kind of, they want to refocus the college on creative pursuits and better preparing students for the future. But one thing that I noted is that they're launching this beauty management program. So I'm like, I think it's interesting that they're scaling back some of their programs. Like, I wrote about the fact that they have the only bachelor's degree in American Sign Language interpretation in the state, and they're cutting that.
But they're adding some others.
But they're adding this program, which, you know, I was like, how is this going to make money? And I got a kind of fuzzy answer about that. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, we are certainly glad you're keeping a close eye on all of these matters. That's WBEZ's higher education reporter, Lisa Curion-Phillip. Thank you again.
Thanks for having me.
This episode of The Reset Podcast was produced by Andrea Guffman, edited by Dan Tucker, and mixed by Micah Yasin. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.